Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. In the studio this afternoon is oncologist Mackenzie Evangelist. Dr. Evangelist practices at New York Oncology Hematology's offices in Albany. She earned her medical degree from Albany Medical College. She completed a residency there, as well as in both internal medicine and pediatrics. She went on to complete a fellowship in medical oncology and hematology at the University of Tennessee Health Science Center in Memphis. Dr. Evangelist is a member of the International Association for the Study of Lung Cancer and serves as principal investigator for all lung cancer studies at New York Oncology Hematology. November is Lung Cancer Awareness Month, and Dr. Evangelist is here to answer your questions and to talk about advancements in screening and treatment for cancers of the lung. Dr. Evangelist, welcome to the Vox Pop.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
Okay, so my first question to you is, what's new?
Well, there's a lot new in lung cancer. I would say starting with screening.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Starting with screening, we now have started screening high-risk patients with low-dose CT to help detect lung cancer earlier when we have a chance of curing the cancer.
Do people get, I want to pick up on something you just said. Do people ever get lung cancer from CT screenings?
So, yes, we know that there is some level of radiation exposure with any of our CT imaging. That's why we're using low-dose CT to limit that.
I see.
Okay.
Okay. You just scared half the nation to death.
I think it's important to realize that the doses that we're talking about are low doses and are unlikely to result in cancer.
Okay. So what's new again?
So the other thing in screening, there's a lot of data out now looking at different ways of screening patients. That can include blood tests, looking at circulating tumor cells. They can also look at the air that we expel from our lungs and looking at different substances there. So there's a lot of interest in trying to identify new screening techniques.
But lung cancer is still a very dangerous disease, isn't it?
It is, and I think one of the reasons it is so dangerous is because it's often detected too late. So 50 to 60% of patients are found to have advanced lung cancer or metastatic lung cancer at diagnosis. What we want to do is detect that cancer earlier so that we can have an impact on survival.
You just said something that was very interesting to me, and that was metastatic, which means it's traveled from some other place, right?
That's right.
How often will lung cancers come from another place, and how often do they originate in the lung?
So we often see metastatic disease from another primary lung cancer. A lot of cancers will spread to the lungs, including breast, prostate, colorectal cancers. So we can see...
Well, that's a long travel, colorectal to the lung, isn't it?
Well, it's an easy travel because what happens is these cancers can spread into the blood system, and that's how they travel.
I see. So here's a question. I already know the answer because you told me in advance. But just so everybody out there gets it, which disease causes more death in women, lung cancer or breast cancer?
So I think that's really a great point. A lot of people don't know is that nearly twice as many women die of lung cancer than breast cancer, and yet there's not as much awareness of that.
One has become a feminist issue to some degree, and the other has not.
Well, I think that one of the reasons that there's not as much awareness about lung cancer is because there's a huge stigma associated with it. There's a strong link between tobacco use and lung cancer. And so a lot of patients, unfortunately, feel a sense of shame and therefore become isolated and don't want to talk about their diagnosis.
So is lung cancer primarily reflective of smoking?
So the majority of lung cancers are seen in smokers or former smokers. About 10 to 15% are seen in non-smokers. About 40 to 45% are seen in former smokers, and about 40% seen in current smokers. Wow. But I think it's important to realize that actually, even though a fair number are diagnosed when they're smoking, most of those patients smoke at the time of their quit smoking at the time of their diagnosis.
So I don't get that.
That's really important because patients who quit, even at the time of their diagnosis, do better than if they continue to smoke.
Oh, I see.
And I think it's important during Lung Cancer Awareness Month that we move past the discussion just of smoking and lung cancer, because that's where we're going to make an impact.
Yeah. So, but you mentioned that a huge number are still former smokers. How far out do you have to be pretty sure you're not going to get it?
You know, the thing is that you're always at risk for lung cancer because, as I said, even patients who've never smoked can get lung cancer.
So well, we know that, yeah.
And so I think for people, your risk substantially reduces when you've quit smoking. And I think it's important to realize that that risk still can be there and to pay attention to your body and any symptoms that you're having and make sure that you check that out with your doctor.
1-800-348-2551. Come on now, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Bob in a rest stop. Well, he was in a rest stop. We'll see if he still is. Bob?
Yeah, thanks very much. So I have a couple questions the doctor could speak to if possible. And the first is whether there are the known specific oncogenes for lung cancer that can be used for markers. And the second question I have is what's the status of testing patients for compatibility to anti-cancer drugs based on how well they'll be able to handle that drug, metabolize it, and things like that.
Okay, here we go. Yep. Doctor?
So, yes, there have been a lot of advancements in identifying certain, we call them mutations or abnormalities, that drive cancer growth in lung cancer. And so we used to look at lung cancer as one disease, it's lung cancer. And now we know that there are certain subtypes. The most notable are the EGFR mutation that's seen in about 5 to 15% of lung cancers. There's an ALK rearrangement and a ROS rearrangement. These are the three that are currently tested for in patients with a type of lung cancer called adenocarcinoma. But there is a lot of research because we're realizing that there are additional genes out there. There's a MET gene, the HER2 gene, and so we have some targets for those. You'll see or hear a lot about all cancers that there's genomic testing being performed where we can identify these genes. But specifically for lung cancer, right now it's very important if you or a loved one has adenocarcinoma of the lung that you talk to your doctor and make sure that those tests are being conducted because that will have implications in terms of how we think your tumor may respond, but also open the doors for treatments that have been shown to be very effective that are really targeted to those mutations.
So it's, thank you very much, Bob. Appreciate it. Okay, it's my understanding, doctor, that if in fact you catch it early, you have a better shot than if you catch it late, but that most of them are caught late.
Yes, that's right. So if you can catch the cancer when it is localized and you can undergo surgery, or focused radiation therapy, that is when you have a chance for cure. That's when treatment or cancer is localized. When it has spread or metastasized, then lung cancer becomes a systemic illness. And while advances have allowed us to treat lung cancer more like a chronic disease, generally a metastasized lung cancer is unfortunately not curable.
Gotcha. Okay, we'll go to Jim in Matamoros. Okay, Jim, you're on.
Is there an increased incidence of lung cancer in sewage treatment workers over the general population as there is with pancreatic cancer?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I'm not sure if there has been shown to be an increased risk. I know there are a number of occupational exposures that probably do increase the risk of cancers, including lung cancer, but that I don't know.
Yeah. Hey, Jim, thank you very much for that question. Appreciate it. Okay, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You got a good chance of getting in now. Dick from, no, I'll tell you what. Dick, you hold on there. We're going to be right back. We're going to take a very short break.
Support comes from Bassett Healthcare Network, providing healthcare services across central New York. We see people, not patients. Bassett.org. Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany. Serving hibachi dinners, sushi, sashimi, curry soups, Thai, and entrees. Offering daily specials, 518-432-0358. Nathan Littower Hospital, Gloversville, New York. Independent community hospital providing services to the community for 121 years. NLH.org. Interactive Media Consulting, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing logo and print design, web development, and digital marketing throughout the Capital Region and beyond, marketing creative and business ideas since 1996, imediaconsult.com. And from Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting the film Above and Beyond, American Pilots Turning the Tide of the Israeli War of Independence, discussion to follow, December 20th, 7 p.m. at Temple Sinai, 518-584-8730.
We're back with Dr. Mackenzie Evangelist, maybe the best name in all organized medicine. Your parents are to be complimented, Mackenzie. I think it's terrific. So let's go to the next one. Let's see. Oh, I see. Suppose that's, I think we told Dick in Longmeadow that we would come to him. So, Dick, you're on. Go ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions. First is that relative to lung cancer, is the type of cell that you have relative to the type of treatment you receive and your survival outcome? That's mm-hmm. the first question. And the second question is, could you comment on some of the new, they're called immuno-oncology drugs from a couple of the drug companies that are slated specifically for lung cancer?
Yes, I'd be happy to. So we know that there are two main subtypes of non-small cell lung cancer. There's adenocarcinoma, which is the most common type of lung cancer, and that's where we've had a lot of advancements. Those are the cancers that we've identified mutations that are linked to targeted treatments, and those have substantially prolonged survival for patients with that type, those types of lung cancers. We know now that the choice of treatments that we give, even if it's not targeted therapy, if it's chemotherapy, should be based on the histology, because we know that certain chemotherapies patients tolerate better and do better with if they have an adenocarcinoma versus a squamous. But there has been a lot of move to identify similar markers in squamous cell carcinomas. So a lot of data has been obtained, and also a lot of studies are being focused on this subpopulation. For instance, the immunotherapy that you brought up was first approved in squamous cell carcinomas, even before adenocarcinomas. However, both of immunotherapy has been approved for both squamous cell carcinoma and adenocarcinoma. So this is a really fascinating way to treat lung cancer, because we're happy about it because it is associated with fewer side effects than our regular chemotherapy. What it does is it helps the immune system better identify and target cancer cells. So if you think about the immune system, it's meant to identify foreign cells like bacteria or viruses. Well, our cancer cells are not foreign, but they are very abnormal because they've acquired these mutations. And because of that, our immune system can identify them. They just don't do it as well as we'd like. And so these are called checkpoint inhibitors. They're antibodies that prevent the immune system from turning off and therefore stay on heightened alert and identify and target the cancer cells.
Hey, Dick, we have five people behind you, so we're gonna let you go. Okay.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks a lot. Okay, let's go to Janet in Shady. Okay, Janet, you've got a question that I've thought about much. Go ahead.
Hi, could you comment on radon and lung cancer, and are there any safe levels of indoor radon?
So radon, I believe, is the second most common risk factor for development of lung cancer.
That's what I've been telling people about the kits when they get them on the fund drive. Second most.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
Didn't want to lie.
And so the EPA does have, I don't know the number offhand, but you can find that out through the EPA.
Yeah, I think it's below two.
Below two?
Yes, I believe it.
Oh, great.
Did you test in your house?
I did.
And?
2.1, and the World Health Organization suggests that it's even lower than two, so it's a tough one.
So did you get the fix?
I'm doing the long-term test, and then I'll see what to do after that.
Right. And did you get your lung cancer kit from, your radon kit from WMC?
You know, I didn't hear that during the fund drive, so I didn't.
One fund drive, I think we gave out more radon kits than any other time. I mean, it was astounding.
A lot of people don't do it, and it's cheap and easy to do.
It means nothing. You open up the thing, you bring it down to the basement, and then you take it after the prescribed time, and you send it in.
Yep.
And that's it. No big.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Hey, Janet, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Yeah, bye. Okay, we'll go to George in Albany. George.
Hello. How you doing, Alan?
So far, so good. Don't ruin it.
I just wanted to ask the doctor, I was wondering if there's any studies out there about the effects of e-cigarettes and vaping versus smoking and, you know, how they relate in the cancer.
Yeah. So I think the jury isn't out on e-cigarettes yet. You know, we know that there is hazards to tobacco use. What e-cigarettes do is that they provide aerosolized nicotine, so you don't get the tar or the combustible substances that you would get from cigarettes. So that part is good. The tough part is that these devices use a liquid, okay, to aerosolize the nicotine, and that's not regulated by the FDA, and we don't know what those liquids contain, and we don't know how they're affecting our body. And I think there's a lot of concern about the e-cigarettes because, you know, one is that they're being marketed to adolescents, and one of the
That's terrible.
That is terrible.
Yeah, that's awful.
We want to prevent people from smoking, and we don't want those young lungs being exposed to such chemicals. But there was a study that showed that I think there's a 4 times higher likelihood that a teenager who's using an e-cigarette will go on to start smoking cigarettes.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there's a concern that these can be used in common public places and that it may take away the stigma of cigarette smoke and make it more accessible to young people.
Well, I don't want to step on you here, George, but doctor, what about, chewing tobacco?
So chewing tobacco, unfortunately, can increase your risk for cancers of the head and neck. So no tobacco would we recommend.
Right.
You know, I think people ask us, well, is an e-cigarette better than smoking? And I think, you know, again, we don't know. Certainly we want you to quit smoking. But I think what we need to do is to maximize the current tools that we have for smoking cessation, patches, oral medications, rather than just going quickly to the e-cigarettes until we have more regulation.
And because it's Lung Cancer Awareness Month, I just want to make sure, doctor, what your recommendation is. Should everybody go get tested? How does that work?
For lung cancer?
Yeah.
Well, right now, the screening studies or the testing is being performed only in high-risk patients. And what that means is a patient who's between the ages of 55 and 80,
mm-hmm.
a patient who has smoked for more than 30 pack years, that is calculated by the number of packs that you smoke a day by the number of years. So one pack a day for 30 years, 2 packs for 15 years. And somebody who is currently smoking or quit less than 15 years ago. Those are the patients that are at the highest risk and should be screened. Until we have enough data to show that we can expand that screening to other patients, we don't recommend that people undergo those screenings.
Okay. Well, thank you. Hey, George, we're going to let you go. Thank you very much. Okay. We'll go to Judy in East Greenbush. Judy. Oops. Wait a second. I messed up. Judy, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about secondhand smoke. I am a home health aide, so I'm in and out of people's homes, and I don't want to be a princess or a diva and ask people not to smoke in their own homes, but I do worry, you know, when I come home and I have, like, you know, black mucus or my hair really smells, and I wonder what kind of damage am I doing to myself?
Well, we do know that people who have had occupations where they're exposed to secondhand smoke, or patients who are family members of people who have smoked, can be at an increased risk for developing lung cancer. You know, that's bartenders, people who have been in those fields where there are a lot of waitresses where smoking was allowed. And we've now made regulations that that's not okay. And I think it's perfectly all right to ask that they not smoke at least around the time that you're in there. I think that's a tough situation, but certainly an important point.
Have you ever tried that, Judy, telling them, I wish you wouldn't smoke?
Some people kind of do it themselves. They say, okay, I won't smoke in front of you. But if I think about being in their home for hours and hours, even if they're not smoking, drapes, their carpet. So I wonder about that. You know, all of the smoke is in the furniture and all of that garbage.
So secondary smoke, Doc, can mean a lot, right?
It certainly can.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. Judy, thanks for a great call. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Marietta in Gallatin. Okay, Marietta, you're on.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering whether there are any data about marijuana smoking and lung cancer.
So I don't have the actual numbers, but we do believe that there is an increased risk for lung cancer with marijuana use. So I do inquire with all my patients if they have had daily marijuana exposure and have recommended that they not or that they refrain from that because of the damage that it can cause to your lungs.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks. 1-800-348-2551. And we'll go to Dawn in Kerhonkson. Dawn, you're on.
Hello. Thank you, doctor. Thank you for taking my call. I just joined your show, so I'm not sure if you've covered any of this, but a family member was diagnosed with lung cancer last year. She had tumors removed. I don't know anything about the type of tumors. She did not have chemo or radiation therapy. This year, she was diagnosed with kidney cancer. She recently had her kidney removed. And sadly, just recently, she was diagnosed again with lung cancer that was not there in June. And the tumors are of kidney origin. Can you explain any of that to me? They said that there are two therapies. She may be a candidate for either chemo or the immune system therapy.
I'm sorry, did you say what was the recent biopsy?
Okay, I'm sorry, I was trying to speak quickly. They said that it is the cancer in her lungs is currently of kidney origin.
Yes.
And the biopsy will be actually tomorrow.
Okay. So we do know, we did speak a little bit that a number of cancers will spread to the lungs. And so it sounds that what's going on in her lungs is actually originated in her kidneys. It's metastasized to the lungs. So there are a number of treatments available for patients with metastatic kidney cancer. The majority of them are actually oral targeted therapies. And there has been a lot of data looking at immunotherapy in patients with kidney cancer. So she likely has a number of options ahead of her.
What does that mean, oral targeted?
Oral targeted are the pills.
Yeah, yeah.
And they can target some of the mechanisms that cancers have for growing abnormally.
I see.
Okay. Well, that's comforting and helpful to me. Thank you so much.
Dawn, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. All right, let's go to Rose in Latham. Okay, Rose, you're on.
Hi. Yes. I have had the high risk factor for lung cancer. So I did the low dose CT scan, and they said to come back in a year. There was a small something, and I should be rechecked in a year. So I did that, and they do send it to my regular doctor. But my regular doctor was just telling me I shouldn't do it. It wasn't worth it. That it's just wasting my money. So now I'm a little wanting to know your opinion of that.
Yeah, do we agree with this?
Well, it's difficult to say without, actually reviewing your CAT scan. You know, that is one of the difficulties with the lung cancer screening is that, you're going to detect things that aren't actually cancer. But you're not going to know about that until you see how it behaves over time. And if you're at a heightened risk for lung cancer, then your lungs may have seen exposure to nicotine, and therefore you may have scars or small, what are called granulomas, benign findings in the lungs. But we need to follow those. And I would recommend that you actually see a pulmonologist who is very versed at looking at these scans, who works with our radiologist, to give you a better sense of whether or not you should continue to have this followed. The radiation departments have criteria for following nodules within the lungs, and so that is based on the size of the nodule and whether or not it looks suspicious. And based on that, they can determine what intervals you should have CAT scans. But I would recommend that you, get a second opinion by a pulmonologist. We do have pulmonologists who work through the screening programs, and I think they're going to be able to review your scans and give you a better answer.
So a pulmonologist is a lung person, too. You're just an advanced lung person. Is that right?
Well, I'm a medical oncologist. Yeah. So I am an internal medicine physician who treats cancers. A pulmonologist is a lung doctor who treats not only lung cancer, but other disorders of the lungs like asthma or COPD. Mm. They also can do procedures like bronchoscopies to go into the lungs and assess that. They can do biopsies that way. So I don't do those procedures. Uh-huh. So we work as a team.
Very good. Hey, Rose, thank you.
You're welcome.
1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Mike in Cornwall. Okay, Mike in Cornwall, you're on.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, yes. The doctor indicated earlier that as far as prevention, you should be aware of your body, physical signs, I guess. But what would the symptoms or physiological signs be that would indicate a potential case of lung cancer?
So unexplained weight loss would be one sign. A persistent cough that is either persists after an infection, like a bronchitis or a pneumonia. Certainly coughing up blood or increased shortness of breath when you exert yourself or certainly at rest would be a sign. Any chest pain, or chest pain when you take a deep breath, those could be signs of lung cancer.
But of course, they could be signs without the blood, but the others could certainly be signs of other more less lethal systems.
Absolutely. And so, I think what you want to do is take note of things that are either severe or very persistent. If you had a bronchitis, then that should improve. It shouldn't be lingering for 6 weeks that you're continuing to have that cough. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I would see your primary physician and let them know about your symptoms.
Okay, and would you, wait for something like this to be present, or if you're in that profile of high risk, should you get a CT, low-dose CT scan?
I think before you go for any imaging, you want to be thoroughly evaluated by a medical professional, and then they can determine whether or not you need a CAT scan.
Thanks, Mike. Okay. Appreciate your call. All right, we'll go to Janie. No, we're going to take a short break, and we'll come right back. You're doing great.
Support comes from Saratoga Hospital, committed to women's health with the Saratoga Midwifery and Women's Primary Care Practice at Exit 13 off the Northway, saratogahospital.org. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive media displays, and commercial casework for corporate interiors, museum installations, and trade shows, empireexhibits.com. New World Catering by Rick Orlando, catering holiday parties in the Hudson Valley and Capital Area. Full service or platters to go, newworldcatering.com. Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst. AmherstCopy.com.
We are back, thanks to our wonderful Zachary. Okay, we are talking to oncologist Mackenzie Evangelist, who practices at New York Oncology Hematology at their offices in Albany. We'll go to Jane in Albany. Okay, Jane, you're on.
Hi. Hi, Doctor, and hi, Ellen. I have a question that I think is similar to one that was asked by a person two calls ago. I had a CAT scan done for a purpose unrelated to lung cancer screening, but unfortunately, in that CAT scan, they discerned a variety of findings, which sent me off to have a bronchoscopy and a diagnostic mammogram. After that, the bronchoscopy said it was negative findings, but I still had to have follow-up CT scans because they did see something called ground glass, I think it's modules or nodules. And the caller prior to this said something similar. I thought about, she was wondering about how often do you have to follow up? Should you follow up indefinitely? Because I'm concerned about the radiation exposure also from the CT scan. And so I'm curious to know what your thought is on that.
So we often see ground glass opacities or nodules on CT imaging. Often they are represent inflammation of the lungs, whether from an infection or just inhaling a substance that your lung is reacting to. It is important that we repeat imaging so that we make sure that these don't resolve and that they don't evolve into a more solid nodule, which would be more suggestive of a cancer. And if you think about the way I think of ground glass nodules is if you take a piece of chalk on asphalt and sideways and just roll over it, it's kind of hazy. Whereas a nodule is if you take the end of the chalk and push hard. That's what they look like. And they really should be followed. But I agree. I think that we want to avoid doing any harm as doctors. We don't want to overdo our scans. And that's why the radiology people have devised these. They're called Fleischmann criteria, so that we're not doing too many or too often scans to limit the radiation exposure. The thing is, you know, again, lung cancers can happen in anybody, even if they're not deemed high risk, and we want to make sure that we don't miss anything.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the low-dose CAT scan. Is that something that is generally used, or is it only used for lung cancer screening?
No, it can be used, so it just has to be requested by your physician.
Okay. All right, then that's what I'll do.
Thanks.
All right, thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye. We'll go to Bobby in Carlton. Okay, Charlton. Bobby, you're on.
All right, thank you. I'm 47 years old. I'm a former bodybuilder, and I keep myself in great shape. I wear the same clothes I did in high school, but I now have severe COPD out of clear blue sky. I don't know how I got it. And, I can barely get up 2 flights of stairs now, and I can't get through a night's sleep without needing my nebulizer 3 times, and I'm on all the medications, but my doctor's having a hard time getting anything else authorized, like the major tests and stuff because of my young age. And I don't know if she thought of anything else I can try to do to get more, some more looked at, you know?
So I would recommend that you start by seeing a pulmonologist if you haven't already. There are some conditions, I'm certainly not an expert in this, where patients have a predisposition to developing COPD or conditions like that. They're not common, but certainly your young age, I would recommend you see a pulmonologist. If it's about lung cancer that you're concerned, certainly I think if you're having as many symptoms as you're describing, if you haven't had a CAT scan, I certainly would recommend it.
I caught up handfuls of this green gelatin-like stuff. It's the grossest thing. I don't know what's happening to me. I used to be such in perfect shape. I don't know what's happening, you know? So I'm kind of freaking out, you know?
I'm sorry to hear that. I think, it sounds like this is a big change for you, and it certainly warrants further evaluation.
Yeah. Okay. Bobby, yeah, thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye.
Good luck. All right. We'll go to Bruce in Charlemont. Okay, Bruce, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a carpenter, and I'm concerned about dust on job sites, particularly wood dust. And I'm just wondering if there's any correlation between wood dust and lung cancer.
You know, I can't speak to that. I don't know. I think anything that we inhale into our lungs, you know, we have to be cautious about. And so any of those things can irritate the lungs. And that I don't know. But I think if you start to have any change in your breathing or shortness of breath, then I would seek evaluation.
So on the lung cancer question, is there... Do we know of a correlation between inhaling things like, you know, wood leavings and cancer?
I don't know that we do.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Bruce. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, let's go to Joseph in Rotterdam, 1-800-348-2551. We can take a few more calls. 1-800-348-2551. Joseph in Rotterdam, you're on.
Hi, I know someone who takes methotrexate for rheumatoid arthritis. I know that's an anti-cancer drug, but is there an increased chance of getting cancer from taking that drug over a long term, decades?
So there are there can be an increased risk for developing cancers with the use of immunosuppressive agents. Often they are used for rheumatologic disorders like rheumatoid arthritis. You know, you really have to sit down with your doctor and discuss the risks and benefits of such treatments. Unfortunately, a number of our treatments, while with good intention and do benefit a lot of patients, do come with risks for development of cancer, although those risks are quite small and certainly much smaller than the benefit that patients see from them.
Thank you, Joseph. All right, we'll go to Frederick in Albany. Frederick, you're on.
Yes, I was just kind of curious. You know, I grew up in the middle 50s, and my father smoked. And I was just kind of curious, you know, how bad was that smoke compared to the cigarettes now? Or with the new ones, you know, like the 70s, 80s cigarettes compared to the 50s?
In other words, unfiltered Camels, for example, compared to what there's out there now.
I think that the unfiltered cigarettes probably pose more risk than filtered cigarettes, although, you know, I don't know the difference between the chemicals that were used in tobacco in the 50s or 60s versus now. I think at the end of the day, we know that we just don't want to see your lungs exposed
don't
to any smoke.
Yeah, don't smoke. Okay, Joseph, thank you. Appreciate it. I guess that was, who was that? That was Frederick. Okay, so now we'll go to Andy in West Sand Lake, and Andy is number two. Okay, Andy, you're on.
Hi. I just have a general question about, I tuned in a little bit late, and I wondered if there are specific symptoms that you see that are things that you should be worried about.
Okay, we'll go over those again, doctor. Yeah.
So unexplained weight loss, I didn't say extreme fatigue outside of the norm, increased shortness of breath, coughing up blood, chest pain. And then, you know, the other symptoms would be symptoms as a result of metastatic disease, bone pain, or neurologic symptoms, you know, could be a sign.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to, no, we won't either. It says number two. What is that? Is that, you can't have two twos up there, can you? Let's see. Let's try this. Who are you? Who are we on with?
Oh, we're Steve from Schenectady.
Okay, there you go, Steve. I guessed right. Go ahead.
So I'm kind of a woodworker, and from what I read about in fine woodworking and that, the wood itself is not a problem, but it would irritate the lungs and it kind of gradually destroy them, and you should limit the dust. But the problem becomes with spalted wood, S-P-A-L-T-E-D, which has mold in it, and that really destroys your lungs. I don't think either one does anything with cancer. But I did want to ask the doctor, and maybe it's along the same lines that I do heating and ventilation work, and sometimes I'm exposed to fiberglass duct work and insulation.
Yeah.
So if she could maybe comment on that.
I don't know of any data linked between fiberglass or such dust. I think any of those are potential, to be harmful and potentially increase your risk. I don't think that we know.
Okay.
You know, that's interesting because, you know, I put fiberglass in our attic also. And I've been worrying about it ever since.
I wonder if these...
It doesn't feel very good, I can tell you that much, when it gets on you.
I think if you're around products that are sort of aerosolized, that you want to use some protection and maybe get those masks.
Sure.
And hopefully that, employers are aware of these hazards and may be able to give you a little bit more advice there.
I'm interested in Steve's point about mold. The other thing we've been hearing, mold, we could start with mold.
I don't know that mold increases your risk for lung cancer. I think it can increase your risk for problems in the lungs, like interstitial lung disease.
And what about fungus?
The same goes.
Same thing. Same goes. I like that answer. Okay. Thank you very much, Steve. All right. We've got to Carrie in New Paltz. Carrie in New Paltz, you're on.
Hi. How are you doing?
Sort of
along the same lines of the discussion about molds and fungus, I had Lyme disease and two co-infections, Bartonella and Babesia, and I know I had a lot of involvement with lung issues that I'd never had before, shortness of breath, they call it breath hunger, a sensation of like blood coming up in my throat when I was trying to run. And I did 4 months of antibiotics and about 6 years of herbs to really get a handle on this. I followed some protocols of Buhner's, but I'm wondering if any of those kinds of bacteria have been connected to cancer. I know there's certain viruses that have been linked to causing certain cancers, but anything that can get into your cell and disrupt your cell's functioning seems to be something that would be considered, I would think.
Yeah, we don't know of any link between viruses or Lyme disease and lung cancer. You're right. There are some viruses that have been linked to cancers, for instance, cervical cancer and HPV. But in terms of Lyme and the co-infections that you've had in lung cancer, I'm not aware of any association.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was lucky enough to come across these books and be able to treat myself aggressively for years and get rid of it completely, but I could see where if I didn't, that things would have gone a very different way. And
okay, thanks, Carrie. The last thing we're going to do around here is get into one of those discussions about whether non-FDA-approved stuff is helpful. If it helped you, that's great. Thank you, Carrie. Appreciate it.
You too.
Yeah. 1-800-348-2551. We can take a few more calls here. 1-800-348-2551. Susan in Sunderland. Susan.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey, I was wondering if there's any hereditary issues involved. My dad had surgery and survived pancreatic cancer.
Wow.
7 years post-op and then developed lung cancer, and then before he died, he had a whole series of cancers along his spine. Both my parents were smokers, including through all my mother's pregnancies, and so I'm just wondering about, that kind of thing.
Whether it's hereditary or not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right now, we do think that there may be a hereditary risk for lung cancer, although it is difficult to determine whether or not these are just similar exposure risks.
But it could also be genetic, right?
Right. We don't have the data like we do, say, in breast cancer with the BRCA gene, that there's a gene that we can identify. But we know that there are some families that have a high number of members that have lung cancers. There is some data that there is a mutation that's a resistance mutation for patients who have an EGFR mutation. And some of those patients have been found to have that mutation even though they haven't been exposed to certain medications. And there's some question whether or not if somebody has a what's called a de novo or a, one of these mutations, these T790M, that maybe that's a hereditary lung cancer. But we don't know. The numbers are way too small for us to know definitively.
So, Susan, any other lung cancers in your family?
I think one of his sisters had breast and lung cancer.
Were you surprised when, or maybe you didn't hear doctor say that, you know, the lung cancer causes more grief than breast cancer?
I was surprised by that because we don't hear that.
No, I think that's a big problem. Thank you, Susan, for calling. Okay. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Okay. So, you know, as we have a couple of seconds here now, I just wanted to ask you this. When people who are listening to this now who may be worried about this, it sounds a little bit difficult because, you know, the symptoms are pretty out there when you're in stage four, but not when you're in stage one. So what do you do, I mean, to make sure you don't have it?
Well, I think what you try to do is the things that you can modify are, of course, to quit smoking. It's important to keep healthy and to exercise and eat a well-rounded diet. There aren't any preventative measures other than that we really know about.
Other than not smoking?
Not smoking and exercise and eating a healthy diet.
Why is exercise so important?
Exercise has been shown to reduce the incidence of a number of cancers.
Really?
Yep.
What do you think it is? In other words, what do you think it is in exercise that helps you avoid those cancers?
Well, I think I don't know exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. I think that there are natural endorphins that you release that reduce your stress hormones, and there may be some link there. Uh-huh. But I don't know the physiology behind it.
Uh-huh. Interesting. What's the number one question when somebody comes into your office, Doc, that they want answered? How long do I have, or what is it? What is it that you think happens?
I think a number of people want to know a timeline, but a lot of people just want to know how we can help them.
Your job can't be easy. I mean, it can't be easy with a killer cancer like this one to have people come in and talk to you. You give them your most optimistic view, but how do you do it?
Well, I have to remember that even on my hardest day, my day's a lot easier than what my patients are going through.
Yeah.
Because I'm not fighting cancer every day.
As a doc, do you ever sort of try to place yourself into the space that the patient has and sort of understand where they're coming from?
Absolutely. I think that's really important as a doctor because treating patients isn't just about prescribing medications. It's about learning who they are, and a lot of the decisions about what treatments to use really depend on the patient's wishes. So long ago, medicine was paternalistic. You did what the doctor told you. Patients are a lot more sophisticated now. They have the internet, they can read, and so they come in with a lot of questions and a lot of goals for themselves and desires, and those may not be completely in line with what we recommend, and that's okay too.
Okay, we're going to take a real fast one here. We're almost out of time, but Adam in Albany, you're on.
Hi, Doctor. I have pulmonary sarcoidosis, and I was wondering if that's going to give me an increased risk for lung cancer later on.
You know, that's a good question. I don't know if sarcoidosis increases your risk for lung cancer. We know that a number of lung disorders like COPD, interstitial lung disease, can increase your risk for lung cancer. I would certainly recommend that if you smoke, that you do quit because you don't want to heighten your risk above that. But I
yep.
really can't tell you definitively.
Adam, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. We are just about out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in. And Dr. Mackenzie Evangelist, thank you for joining us today. Did I do something wrong?
No.
Thank you for joining us today. Support for Medical Monday comes from Ellis Medicine, providing options, support, and help for surgical weight loss at Ellis Bariatric Care Center, Schenectady, ellismedicine.org. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowitz. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. On tomorrow's program, it's an open forum. We don't know what we're going to talk about yet, but it will be political. Stay tuned now for a news update.